Hello, welcome to Poet Runner. Today we'll be talking to Kiara Morrison. I have my co-host Richard Modiano here too. Here we go.
All right. Well, first off, well, congratulations on your book, Cauldrons, which is out. It's been out, what, since last year, right?
Yes, since July, before this July. So a year ago July.
Okay. Okay, well, it's still fresh, let's put it that way. And it's published by Paper Press, and we'll return to them in a little bit. So let me ask you, how long have you it seems like you've been active in literary circles for quite a while. And you've had a lot of publications and magazines, but this is your first book. So how did this book come about exactly?
Oh, gosh. You know, the books, a lot of the poems in the book were written before this book came to be at all. And then when Paper Press showed interest in publishing me, I decided to try to put together a collection that, for one, centered around the divine feminine, which is why only 13 poems, which is the, you know, divine feminine number. And then I tried to extract from what I have poems just about sort of salvaging love from the shadows, you know, and a sort of sense of oneself out of a lot of wounds in different ways we experience love. So
there, it does tie in, the healing theme does tie in with the whole idea of cauldrons and, of course, the witchcraft that is frankly discussed, that is frankly a theme of that. And, of course, witches were healers. And that was one of the their values to the community before the crackdown that some listeners maybe. I mean, if you want to, I would suggest for listeners who want to go into the whole background of witchcraft, a good book to start with is Drawing Down the Moon by Starhawk, where she discusses sort of the history of witchcraft from the inside,
great
as it were, not an outsider's dichotomous dualistic perception of it, that this was something that was bad, et cetera. There's no stereotypes or any of that involved, which of course is is, you know, basically creates mind fog if you were approaching the subject through that. But anyway, let's just start with one of the poems in the book that sort of sums this up. And I was thinking maybe you could read for us Witch Poet.
Yeah, sure. That might be the oldest poem in this collection, actually. It's a great choice. Now I just got to find it. There it is.
Page 19.
Thank you. Okay, Witch Poet. Before he hijacked her diction, she wrote for topics that matter. Mothers starving for more wombs, black-eyed bruised cruisers and scathed street kids, wishes blocked from sunburns, worded by winter. Now, under his spell, her word revolutions wait while she prostitutes for male pronouns. But poets needn't worry. Whores either die or they recover in the wake of a heretic's regret. They resurrect as a Serengeti elephant, guiding damaged girls back to dictionaries for a little witchcraft, for a cauldron stinking of rich diction, self-respect. Strong blood from her pen returns her to summon Amazons, haunting him in sleep. In manuscripts, her words, such spells escort her back. Her words burn him in the fire she conjured him.
That's a really nice poem. Really good. I like all of the images in that add up. And readers, when you get this book, you will see how it's laid out on the page. I mean, it's. You will see that it's a very well crafted piece. So,
thank you.
And it's always nice to hear the poet read it herself. So, mm-hmm. I mean, this is like there's, as with the best poetry, it is packed with meaning. If you bring a little knowledge to this poem, you will get a deeper appreciation, I think. But, you know, there's a kind of hermeneutic that works with all good poetry, and there's sort of like an outer, an inner, and let's say a secret meaning. And anybody can get the outer meaning of this. You can read it just for the surface narrative. But the inner meaning is what, you know, makes a poem last. Then there's that secret meaning that perhaps is known only to the poet. And if you were maybe the poet's soulmate, you might be able to perceive that. And, you know, it's there. But that secret meaning is what, for me, is sort of the lifeblood of the poem, even though you don't see it. Even, you know, I mean, an outsider may not be able to see it, but that sort of pulses through the poetry. So I detect this in a lot of the poems in this book. So to me, that's really what makes poetry sing. I mean, it's what makes it a literary form that you really want to enter into. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, K.R., you can count yourself among top-flight poets because you have that throughout this book. I mean...
Oh, wow, what a compliment. Thank you.
Well, this is my particular view. I mean, it's... And the other thing that really resonates is a sort of the emotion is... I don't want to say the emotion is controlled, but the emotion is not blasted. Let's put it that way. It's not blasted. It is there. It is there for you to appreciate and to pick up on. And coming to, when I say the book draws on feminine energy, that is not a to denigrate it in any way, because to tap into feminine energy, that is really the energy that underlies life.
Yeah.
I mean, I am an old man now. I have no, without being born from a woman, I wouldn't be here. My mother gave me life. And if we were to talk about what is primal to this universe, it is the feminine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can't prove how, what was the origin of the Big Bang or something like that, but it had to have some energy. It had to have generative energy, and that generative energy comes from the feminine, and you know, there's no way of getting around that, I think. I mean, others might have. Certainly we all labor under a patriarchal ideology that has infected us to different degrees, you have to basically expose yourself to other. If you were still thinking in the patriarchal mode, you've got to escape that by connecting with the feminine, and the best way of doing that is through poetry, I think. I mean, you know, you can put your prejudices aside, you can pick up a book like Cauldron's and start to connect with it. So that's
wonderful.
Of the book that I got from it.
Wonderful. Yeah, I back to your sort of premise about the principles of witchcraft. It's you know, it's my belief, and anyone who practices their belief as well, that all of us, despite whatever gender we identify with, we have, you know, both masculine and feminine energies within us, or ideologically we'd like to balance them, you know. But for the purposes of the book, I really wanted to submerge myself and thus the reader into the feminine as a way of sort of discovering strength, which is contrary to what we usually associate with feminine. You know, that's typically a masculine description when we think of strength and power. And you know, for myself, I highly disagree, and I kind of wanted to show power and strength from a feminine perspective in a feminine way.
Well, I know there is a sort of, I think it was Starhawk who made this distinction between power over and power
mm-hmm.
with. And
mm-hmm.
this kind of, the patriarchal power is the power over, is the
mm-hmm.
power over somebody else to make them conform, to make them do your bidding, basically to manipulate you and control you. And that's not the power of the feminine at all. That's a
right.
perversion of that. That's a perversion of that power. It draws its energy from the feminine source, but
yes.
It uses it to completely wrong ends.
Exactly. It's worth mentioning too, or distinguishing too, between the patriarchy and masculine energy, and it is possible that differentiation. You know, like we
yeah.
know, patriarchy is systemic, and you know. But masculine, it is entirely possible to have benefits to that masculine energy that's not patriarchal.
Yes, of course.
It's not oppressive or, yeah.
Yes, well, sure, sure.
Yeah.
People who identify as male can draw on that energy
mm-hmm.
to their benefit and to the benefit of others without
yeah.
going through the patriarchal filter. But that patriarchal
yeah.
filter is always is a sort of an ever-present obstacle, let's put it that way.
Oh,
it's an
yeah.
obstacle.
Yes. As we're experiencing these days. So.
Yeah. Well, there's a sort of a reactionary period that we are in
mm-hmm.
that is a holdover from the previous administration.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we all have to resist. But well, another one of your poems that I really liked was the one "Her Altar." So
I wonder
if you could lay that one on us.
I would love to. Do you want me to talk about it first or wait on that?
Sure, please do. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
So, you know, I've been writing since I was I've been writing poems since I was 12. And before my mother passed, we had this very intimate conversation at her bedside about why my art does not belong to me. And, you know, she basically kind of called me out to start sharing my work. And that was when I really started submitting work. And after we lost her, I started building her an altar in San Francisco at Garfield Square Park. And it was fascinating to me how many people were drawn to her. I mean, it was really something. The veil would lift, and my mother was literally connecting to people who were grieving the loss of someone or something. And, you know, to get these comments from these strangers about who she was and just how accurate it was pretty incredible. So this poem came out of those altars at the park. It got nominated for a pushcart, which I was really proud of because it's about her. It should be that poem, you know?
Yeah.
So, okay, here it is. Her Altar. Your pictures come first. Cascades of you that testify. Language can't touch what a pirate woman weathers and braves. Her Grand Canyon narrative hiked so ordinary souls can stretch, bleed a little, digest. Then come your favorite things, Supremes records, your Lakers t-shirt, Chevrolet steak and eggs, Folgers coffee and wild turkey. Your sacred trail of tears. Around moonrise, candles converge. A bone echo of your voice returns. Lost daughters come, thirsty for a nest. A broken man, he lost his mother. I watch his tears rest in your sunset hands. The smell of motorcycle engines, polished oak and gunmetal wrap around him like a moon blanket. A little girl climbs inside portraits of you. Is this your mom? She asks. Her questions kiss your paintings and photographs. My grandma went to heaven too, she adds.
She declares her Martha dress. I stitched it myself on my mom's sewing machine, she says. Her green eyes fastened to you. I retreat to all those costumes you handmade for us kids. My brother, a clown. My sister, a Cherokee warrior on Hallow's Eve. I visit those sandboxed visits, a sad child's playground, rusty swings chained to first love lost. I hated the world didn't get along with you. A policeman clears his throat, a cold disruption. Ma'am, it's time to break down. Pack it up. Time for you to go home. Home. My eyes find callous hands wrapped around a flashlight and a gun strap. Very home on wounded knee, your countless evictions, a rental, an emotion, a relationship. I blow out the candles. I say goodbye. Like leaving you on weekends, an ache looms in my lungs. Outweighs me. I collect you, pictures and offerings, as if I'm packing a lifetime of our conversations. I feel our mother moon hold me, as if I'm a foster child. My new address, All Souls Day.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, it's,
thank you.
It's again, it's the transformation of an actual experience into a work of art, something that I think it's something that, that all people feel, but not all people have the power to articulate their feelings. And one of the things that poetry provides, and especially in this poem, Her Altar, is a way for people who share these feelings to find voice, to find someone that is able to give voice to them and to take solace from that, or to say, I understand this. I've had this experience. I felt this, and somebody has articulated it for me.
Thank you.
Another one that I really like was a poem called Her Burden. So I'll save my question. I'd like to hear this one. This is really a
okay. Yeah, I love reading this one when I'm at curations, because I like to announce that this grew out of a really grueling week. I teach students, and it was a week of just kids going through so much and walking them through that pain. And in that same week I got dumped. Well, basically like ghosted. And at the same time, I watched Thelma and Louise. And after watching Thelma and Louise and going through all that, I wrote this poem. So, Her Burden. In 1 week, a woman can grow life, shoot a rapist, bleed out the last word while he leaks red hell on car fenders she waxes when she isn't waning. In 1 week, a woman can talk tears off suicidal bridges while she bridges words to new days dressed in smiles, preparing breakfast mixed with messages, self-discovery over easy, pancakes that make pain too pass. In 1 week, a woman can become an armed robber, or she can nurse bottles and beers and in the same week bring freedom to kids she never raised but carries. While vacuuming others' mess, a woman can write a poem on hallways she architects inside her head that always she revises, surveillances. She can burn down the world with flammable honesty, then discover fire extinguishers while men choke, cough, drop for cover.
That last stanza is a real kicker.
Thank you.
Yeah, this one is also very, probably an older poem in the collection, and it has been through so many drafts. It was just so important to me to nail a structure that sort of did more than one thing and communicated more than one message, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Well, you succeeded. You succeeded beautifully with that.
Thank you.
And of course, the lunar imagery is pervasive. And
yeah.
Talk a little bit about that. Tell our listeners something about that.
Well, you know, at least for me, the moon is such an integral part of everything I do. I mean, everything. It's really where I go to engage in ritual, how I process all my healing, all the shadow work I've done. As a writer, it's just interesting the way poems can mimic the phases of the moon in the same way a woman's cycle does. And so it just seemed, it wasn't really intentional. It was almost like she was always there in the making of these poems and in the putting together of the collection itself. I don't know that I could have removed moon motifs from the various messages of love and wounds in the poem and just sort of the cycles of death and rebirth that we go through in order to figure out what love even looks like. That's the best way I can really put it. It's hard to describe.
Well, let's try it with a poem. The 8-hour shift, that seems to sum it up in a way.
Yeah. Okay. This one actually had a different structure that didn't fit with the book, but it was okay. It turned out beautiful. I like it in here. 8-hour shift. Mother Moon, she is a mistress. She spreads her legs around Gustav Klimt prints nailed to burgundy bedrooms. She wraps her ivory velvet thighs around one woman awake. Beneath stained sheets, cold love replaced by remnant nightfall, wet violet. Mother Moon charges by the hour even for a harmless dance. For full price, she sends mariachis to balconies unswept, conjuring hearts starving, lovers blue-balled and bereft. For a little less, she hovers. Broken-hearted tongue sucks salt left between her breasts. Her moon-blood womb swooning for love inside sex, lonely and cauldroned, conjuring. Mother Moon, naked blue, arouses red inside my flesh. Left sticky by her librations, I hear my backbone think. My nightlight mother, I smell you on my flesh when I awake to the daytime dead. Mother Moon, always a pleasure, our business in my bed.
Yeah, that's a beautiful poem.
Thank you. Go ahead.
After you. Go on.
No, please, you. I was just going to say something about the setting of where I used to sleep, so.
Well, I was going to talk about the title of the book, Cauldrons, which is another part of witchcraft. It's an iconographic part of witchcraft, mm-hmm. and it has a certain significance. Maybe you could tell our listeners what that means.
Yeah, you know, I mean, as a poet, I mean, you can't, for me personally as a witch, I can't separate my practice from poetry in that, you know, poems are a conjuring, and, you know, we get the word spell from the word spelling and the making and the diction and sort of the conjuring of either manifesting or shedding, which is phases of the moon, and what gets done in the in cauldroning or in any ritualistic practice with a cauldron. There is a sort of churning, or there's a sort of shedding through, you know, fire divination and the burn. And it just seemed like the perfect title for what the poems all seem to do, both individually and also in the relationship they held together in the collection of 13. Cauldron just seemed like the right title, because together there's a manifesting of love discovered, and there's also a shedding of things in order to get to that love. So it just seemed like the right symbol for the title for me.
It works. It holds it all together. I mean, to make an obvious pun, but it all fits in.
Yeah.
And so we're gonna have to wrap up. So I wonder if you would give us one more poem from the book of your own choosing.
Sure. Okay. Let's see. I'll read, you know, I haven't read Sea Babies in a while. That one is on page 13. Oh, perfect. That's funny.
Yeah.
Sea Babies. She feeds him dark honey from her mouth. Lip couplets watch words withdraw, wait their turn. Moon and sun write notes to her thighs, to his hands. Under his bare lung, she finds buried a large nautilus. Inside its spirals, she hears owls singing, signaling her to swallow him, his brown skin. Salvage his heart part sunk below his upset seabed stomach. Inhale his silent mind. Hold thoughts as he holds his breath. He feeds her homemade soup from an amethyst nest. Abrasions drown. Her fixed scars unhook, sink. Moon and sun summon two sea babies within. Hands stirring, sighs sirening.
Yeah, so that final line is really great. I really like that. And,
wonderful.
What is coming up for you? What publications?
I'm working on some manuscripts right now. One of them is a collection, a tribute collection to women and just the feminist struggle right now. That one's going to take a while. I'm hoping to find it a home by March for International Women's Month. And then I'm also working on a collection. I have no idea when it'll be done, called Mott Street. It's inspired by childhood experiences with my siblings. And Mott Street was a street we lived on with my mother. That one's going to take a while. And then I've got this larger collection from her wrist that is due to the editor here pretty quick, and I'm not even close to done with that. So my hands are full.
Okay. So we can look forward to more new work from K.R. Morrison.
Yes.
The book we're talking about is Cauldrons. It is available from Paper Press. They have a website store. Buy it directly from the publisher if you can, because it's very important to support small press publishers. I mean, it's the big stores, they don't need your support that much, but buying it from the publisher is the best way to get this book. If you can find it in your local independent bookstore, look for it there. And as an absolute last resort, go to Amazon, but start with Paper Press, and they are on the web. K.R. Morrison, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for your time. And
thank you for
I hope
having
we get to
me.
Talk again.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And now next we have Gabriela J. Sufer, I think. I got it right? Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Yes,
that's correct.
How are you? Was it? Wow.
Good. How are you?
This is the first time in three shows I got the name right.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm great. You not only run marathons, you do the Ironman thing, right?
Yes, correct.
So since we basically have talked a lot about marathons, I mean, which ones do you prefer, the Ironman or the marathon? Because the Ironman's a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, I actually haven't really raced a lot of standalone marathons. So far, the marathons that I've raced have been in an Ironman. So I really enjoy it. I would like to try to race a marathon, though, someday, soon.
So
without having to swim and bike before.
So how do you train for the Ironman? Because I know it's a lot different than training for a marathon.
Yes, definitely. Well, you have to balance three different sports. So I have a coach, thankfully, and she helps me a lot with my workout schedule. But I'll usually try to run 3 or 4 days a week, and I'll bike 3 or 4 days a week and then swim 2 or 3 days a week, and then also strength training and some core work in there too.
How many miles do you run when you're running?
Well, my longest run will get up to about 20 miles or so.
Wow. Yeah. And when you do strength training, do you use weights or do you avoid weights or you just body weight?
I kind of do a mix of everything. I like one day a week to go into the gym and actually lift weights. Usually when I do that, I just do upper body mostly. And then for lower body, I kind of do a mix of body weight strength and also a TRX band. So I like to do a lot of single leg movements, like single leg squats and good mornings, reverse mountain climbers, stuff to strengthen my hamstrings because those usually tend to be weaker than quads in a lot of runners. And triathletes in general. So I try to do that. And then, like, home weights, too. So I'll do upper body. So a mix of everything. But they're not long sessions. They're pretty short, like 15 to 30 minutes at a time.
I know when I use weights on my legs, I don't know I keep reading articles where it says you should do squats with weights and you should do the leg press, but then when I run, my legs feel heavier. And I don't know, it kind of throws me off.
Yeah.
How do you feel about it?
It definitely helps if you time it right. Like, if I do lower body, I'll try to do it after a run when I know that I have an easier day the next day. Like, I'll try to do it on a run day, so the next day might be a bike day or a swim day, so I don't have to run right after doing a lower body. So it kind of helps to avoid that heavy feeling a little bit.
It's not legs. You can feel it. I remember running a marathon like 2 days before I did a heavy leg day, and I regretted it.
Oh wow!
It was painful. It was a big mistake. So how many Ironmans have you done?
I've done 3 so far.
And, I mean, I would love to be able to do that, but I just can't swim, you know, like, I'm not a strong swimmer. And it's like,
Can you swim at all? Or just,
I can dog paddle. I mean, that's as good as it gets. I think maybe dog paddling. But I'm not so good at it. You know, I mean, I appreciate the Ironman. I mean, I would love to eventually, if I could, you know, get some strength in my swimming to do it. Because, I mean, right now I'm training for an ultra, 31 miles, and I just want to keep moving forward. I mean, I respect people who do the Ironman. I respect people who do the Ironman because I think it's a little, I think probably more brutal. Because you got the running, you got the bike, and you got the swimming. I mean, how does your body feel after all that?
Well, walking is usually a little challenging the next few days after one. It's definitely rough. Like, even just running feels so much different in an Ironman than just going out for a run. Like, your whole body just feels super heavy.
Well, I figured recovery would be harder because, I mean, I can run a marathon and run 5 to 10 miles the next day, but I don't think if I did an Ironman I'd be able to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely not. I'll usually wait at least a week or two before running after an Ironman.
Yes, I think the Ironman. I definitely think the Ironman takes more out of you, and it takes more. I mean, how do you eat for Ironman? And when you do an ultra, you have to eat and rehydrate. Is there any of that in an Ironman?
Oh yeah, there's lots of that. Like, I feel like that's one of the biggest things of Ironman. That's not really the most obvious, but it is nutrition and hydration, because it's a long day, and if your fueling and hydration isn't on point, it doesn't matter how fit you are, you're gonna crumble. So there's definitely a lot of that. A lot of training with it. You know what you can handle because everything is super sensitive on race day. I usually do a lot of Hammer Nutrition fuels on the bike, like Hammer Perpetuum, because it has some proteins and fats as well. Because, I mean, when you think about it, the Ironman's all day, so you're missing, like, lunch and dinner and meals. So it's good to get a little bit of protein and fats in there, too. And I'll also do a lot of electrolyte caps to replenish my electrolytes, especially if it's a hot day. That definitely plays a big role by the time you get to the run if you're not hydrated. It's hard to fix that by that point.
Right now I'm going through the whole process of I just reordered some electrolyte caps and because, I mean, I got into the bad habit of not hydrating at all during marathons, and, you know, I go, okay, I'm mighty, I can do that, but it's like... Yeah. It's kind of stupid because at the end of the marathon, I'm kind of wiped out where I'm drinking about 6 or 7 bottles of water, like, straight after the marathon.
Oh, wow.
So I know I did that 4 times. So I wore my body out. Now I realize if I'm going to do more, like, try to get the 31 into 50 miles, I got to teach myself how to hydrate and not to overhydrate. I was running 50 miles where I would, like, after the 10 miles, would, like, just take a sip every 5 miles. I mean, every mile. Because the problem I always had with hydrating was I'd always end up drinking what's in the bottle too quick. And then, you know, it kind of it messes up your stomach. So, I mean, I have to find a way to become more disciplined when I take my hydration.
Definitely. Like, doing more consistent, smaller amounts would definitely help for sure.
The funny thing is, when I didn't hydrate, I didn't feel I needed it. But then when I started hydrating, it's like you get that little bit of taste and you want more. You know, like your body's like, yeah, this is good. Give me more. And you're like, no, I can't.
Especially when you're running. Like, I feel like when you run, everything kind of sloshes around if you take in too much.
That's a problem, too. And I hear about ultramarathon runners that actually some eat protein bars or, like, you know, they have certain things that they eat that are okay. One guy told me he eats baby food when he does an ultramarathon.
Oh, wow.
You know, because it's easier to digest, and it's easier to deal with.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like a gel, almost.
Yeah, I'm afraid of gels because if you take the wrong gel when you're running, it can have a really bad effect.
That's why it's really important to train with it to see what kind of gels you can handle safely.
I don't think people who don't do Ironmans or, do marathons understand, how much work it is, to get everything right and to figure out what you need for yourself.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Everybody's body reacts differently. How you train will work for you, but might not work for me. And it's just like everybody has their body reacts a different way. And it's like there's no one set way to train. I don't think there is.
It's very individualized.
Yeah. So when did you start doing Ironmans? How long ago did they start for you?
Well, I did my first full Ironman last year in September. That was Ironman Chattanooga. And I had been wanting to do an Ironman for a long time. But my coach recommended that I wait until I'm in my 30s. To do one just because it takes such a toll on your body, training and the race day itself. So that's why I waited. But then COVID happened, and so I didn't really get to do that for my 30th. So for when I turned 31 that year, I wanted to try doing it. And I love it. It was great. I enjoyed it. I love endurance stuff. I'm an endurance junkie, so that's always been something I knew that I would love and want to do. And I liked it so much that the next month I jumped in another one. And I did the Great Floridian in Claremont, which was right in my backyard, so it was really hard to just pass that up because it's right there.
Yeah, I know. Do you ever do any individual like biking things or swimming things or like running things, or you just are always going to do just the Ironman and keep them combined?
I do individual events. Like I'll do a lot of running races in the spring, like before triathlon season comes. I like to do some 5Ks, and I did the Gasparilla 15K and some half marathons like for fun. And I used to do a lot of time trials on the bike. And I used to do bike racing too. I don't really do bike racing much anymore. Like if I were to do one now, it would probably be time trial or gravel. I've always kind of wanted to try that out too. That looks fun. Not really swimming though. I haven't really done standalone swimming events much. But biking and running, yeah.
Yeah, we had yesterday interviewed a 13-year-old who actually done a 50-mile run, and he's actually a champion at swimming, and it's like kind of felt kind of, inadequate. 13-year-old kids already run a 50-mile.
Wow, that is very impressive.
No, it was to me, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the talk because the father was there telling me, how he kept his son hydrated. He did the runs for his son. He wasn't a runner. He just decided to be a runner for his son.
Aww.
Which is cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I appreciate it.
To be able to do that together.
Yeah. And now he basically towards the end of the conversation, he's talking like how his son surpasses him running now. Now he had to get a new pacer to keep up with him because he can't.
Oh, boy.
That's kind of why I like doing the show, because I learn new things from different people, different angles and different things about how to train. And, everybody does it differently. There's no one set way. There just isn't. And, I've actually started listening to people. I've actually started only doing 10 miles and 5 miles and 10 miles just to, like, because someone suggested that, and it's actually working for me now. Because I got a little crazy. I was doing, like, 50 miles for 3 weeks straight. The body got into it. I mean, like you said, endurance junkie, because it just, my body got used to it. And I thought it was getting easy, but then, you know, I realized maybe, you know, I'm pushing too hard. You know?
Yeah, your body definitely needs some recovery, too.
Yeah. And what do you take anything for recovery? Do you eat anything? Before you do the marathon, how do you eat, and how do you eat when you're recovering?
So, I do a lot for recovery. I do like daily recovery. I have these boots. They're kind of like Normatec boots, but not like most people know what Normatec boots are. So it's like that, but it's from FLS3. So I try to do a session of those every day. I also have the E-stim, the pads for muscle stimulation. So I'll do those too. And every fourth week when I'm training is usually a recovery week. So my training is a lot less and my intensity is a lot less. So it kind of allows my body to recover and repair and get stronger and get ready for the next block of training. And getting ready for the Ironman, of course, I taper. So I do about 3 weeks of taper. So just gradually kind of start decreasing volume and keeping some intensity up. So my legs are still kind of fresh, but not fatigued. So it's all about shedding fatigue, but keeping your fitness as you get closer to that race. And then just make sure that you're rested and ready to go on race day.
I think for the Bulldog run, which is 31 miles, I think I'm going to, the day before, just rest, not go to work, and then just, you know, be ready for the race, because I think I'm actually going to just try to taper like a week before. It's just because I haven't run 31 miles, and it's going to be hilly and it's going to be in the heat. So, and I was like,
oh, wow.
And I'm still thinking, what the hell was I thinking when I signed up for it?
Well, it's a challenge for sure.
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, but how do you, I mean, that's me personally, before I do a marathon, I'm always like, why the hell did I, why am I doing this? But after 4 or 5 miles, I'm just going. And it's, I think that's how the Bulldog's going to be. I'm going to worry, be nervous until when I start, I'll be fine, you know?
Yeah.
Because how do you feel before you start your triathlon, your Ironman? How does your mindset come? Or is it already there?
Yeah, it's I'm totally nervous too. Like it's a normal. I've come to accept that being nervous is good. It's normal.
Yeah.
Because it means that I care about the race, but I'm also excited for it too.
No.
So it's all the unknown, you know, like not knowing how it's going to be. Like it's, I think that's the part that kind of makes me nervous the most.
Yeah.
You just kind of have to realize that everyone's going to be dealing with the same conditions, the same weather, the same terrain. You did what you could, and you just have to be in the moment and trust your training and just do your best, and whatever happens, happens.
I agree. Where do you prefer to train, streets or trails or – when you're running, that is. I mean, what do you prefer for a course?
For running, lately I've been running a lot on some paved trails. I've been doing that a lot lately. I try to go to the hills and get some hills in. Sometimes I'll go and run on the dirt. Like there's this Lay 10-mile dirt loop. Well, it's it's kind of part of it's under construction, but I still like to run out there sometimes to get some different terrain, and it's hilly and not as much impact. Lake Louisa State Park. So I like to go there, especially for bricks too, because it's enclosed and there's like a 10-mile loop that I like to do, and I'll do laps of that loop on the bike and running. And I like that because there's not a lot of traffic and I can run on the road and have I make my own aid station by my car with water and electrolytes and stuff like that, so I can refill if I need to. And I'm never too far away, so if something happens or I don't feel good, I'm not so far away from my car that I can't make it back. So it's kind of safe too, which is nice.
I run with my bus card just in case. You know, it's like if I conk out, you know, that's the bus. No, I'm kind of. I like hills too, but it's kind of. I live in Hollywood, so I have to find hills and make hills. And I do a lot of stair running because I found three places where there's stairs. And then I finding trails. There's only about two good trails near me that I can run, and they're like 4 to 5. I have to run 4 to 5 miles to get to them. So it's kind of like.
Wow.
But it's good because it makes me run a full 10, which is, you know, what I want to do.
Okay. That's good.
But, you know, I mean, yeah, it's a lot. So with the, how do you feel after a race? Do you feel like, you know, wow, I did it, I accomplished it, and then when's the next one, or like, I'm never going to do this again?
Let's see. Usually I feel relieved. I feel relieved that it's finished and the unknowns are known now. And I'm usually satisfied having a break a little bit after that, but I also tend to look ahead more often than I should. And I'm looking at, okay, well, when's the next one? So yeah, I guess I am kind of ready to do the next one and excited about it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I kind of get into that same mind. You know, as I'm running the marathon, I'm thinking about the next one that I planned, and I'm like, going, do I really want to do that next one? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do it. But I'm like, you know, part of me is like, kind of, no, because, you know, the funny thing, as much as you enjoy it, part of you is going, like, why am I pushing myself this hard? And I mean, you when you get to the end, you realize, yeah, because you enjoy it. But some parts, like the beginning to me is always the hardest, you know, when you get started.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, it's getting past that, you know, that first 2 to 3 miles for me is always, like, the thing. But I think it's a different mindset. When you do a 5K, you figure, well, that's easy. And, like, when you're at the point that I think you're at and I'm at, half marathon's easy too, because
you already
know you can clock those miles and they're not going to be hard for you. So basically, a 5K and a half marathon becomes you know practice training for the things that you really want to get to, which is the Ironman, and for me is an ultra.
Yeah.
So all these little things that you're doing.
Okay,
I mean, when you do a 5K, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, like, with a half marathon, when you're racing a half marathon, like, and you know you can cover the distance, but when you start doing longer distance races, there's always that unknown, like, you might not finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think my third race, I had shin splints, so I ended up coming in about 5.5 hours in Long Beach, and it was just, I mean, I finished, but, I mean, I was limping. But I didn't want to quit.
Oh, wow.
But the shin splints killed me. I mean, I haven't had shin splints like that in years, but they hurt like hell.
Ooh,
you know, it's like, part of me going, I should stop. And I'm like, no, it's right. The finish line is only about 2 miles away. I get there. Yeah, when I got there, I didn't feel so good about it. But I got there. But it's just
I mean,
what type of injuries have you ran into? What type of have you had shin splints? Have you had problems running? Is there anything like that's caused you like any setbacks?
Lots of that, unfortunately. Thankfully, it was earlier in my career. Like I don't really deal with too much right now. But I used to get shin splints really bad. I had like a stress reaction in one, and that kind of set me back almost a whole year or two. And I've also shattered my elbow, and I fractured my knee. So 2013 was a terrible year. I shattered my elbow in the spring, so I was out for like 6 months, two surgeries. And then in the fall, when I finally like got back to at least biking, I couldn't run yet because of my shin still, but back to biking, and I fractured my knee. So I feel like there was a good 2 years almost that I didn't really run much or get to run much because of injuries. But thankfully it healed up okay.
I had I've done Long Beach Marathon constantly now because it's become an annual thing for me. I mean, but I think last year I had a hernia operation like about a month before it. So like I was going to do it, but it's like I talked the doctor into letting me, you know, start training earlier, you know, give the sign off. But at work I was still sick, you know, kind of like, I'm not good enough to lift things at work, but I'm good enough to go to the gym.
Oh, wow.
You know, I kind of set it up so I could start training again, and the doctor just said, take it light, which I didn't, but I did manage to recover enough to be able to do the marathon.
So you did it.
But, yeah, but it's kind of like, you know, most people are telling me I was nuts because I didn't want to wait, you know, because I didn't want to, you know, lose the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
How did you feel?
It was good. I mean, actually, it wasn't a bad time either, too.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Amazing what it's amazing what the body can do when you really want to get somewhere with it, you know? I think when you do a thing, you it's not just your body, it's your mindset, too, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, the mind,
you know
the
I mean?
Mindset plays a role.
You know, I don't think we could accomplish what we accomplish if we're like just so-so about it. We're like, maybe, I don't know. I'm not feeling this. I mean, if you stay in a mindset that you're not feeling it, you're probably not going to finish, and you're probably, you know, shouldn't even, you know, running, doing this stuff, you know. I mean, that's just my take
definitely.
On it. So when's your next race? When's your next triathlon or your next Ironman?
Well, I might be doing one in September, but it would kind of be under the radar though because they don't have a pro race, and I just got my pro card, so I wouldn't be eligible for any of the age group awards, so I would just kind of be there but not eligible for anything because I've been registered for since last year
for it. So it's kind of like when you audit a class in school, you're not really going to get credit for it.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, at least it'll be good practice though. And I'm curious to see how I can do on the same course as last year to see my improvement. Cause it's going to be the same exact course, but just a different me, you know? So it'll be exciting to kind of see how far I've come in a year, and it'll be a good experience and allow me to try to push it and just do an Ironman, I guess.
Do you have another one coming up after that, or do you have any, do you have set races coming up?
I do have another. I have another one in November, but it's kind of the same thing. They don't have a pro race at that one, and I registered last year. But I'm still going to do it. As far as the spring, though, I'm still trying to decide which which races I should do in the winter and spring, and kind of seeing how I recover too from the Ironman to decide.
Yeah, I think I kind of, I'm in the same position that you are. I'm trying to, this year I've done about 6-7 marathons, and now when it comes to next year, 2023, I'm going to probably keep some and let go of some, try some new ones and see which ones work for me now, because it's like, have you ever had a course that you didn't like and then you don't want to go back to?
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, you know, it's like, I don't want to do that race again. Because it doesn't work for you anymore.
Yep. So. Yep, I have a few like that.
Well, it's been great talking to you. I want to bring you back on maybe like, you know, in 6 months and see your I mean, I've asked everybody on the show that, you know, who trains like you do or like, you know, was very committed to come back on the show, because I think the way I want to run the show is like check in with people that I've had on the show and then, you know, just to see progress, you know?
Yeah, that would be awesome. I like that.
Because, I mean, I think it would be fun to see, you know, where you're going, you know, how far you get in your next one. And, you know, I mean, maybe compared to time, you know, you have, you know, your PR from, you know, this show to the next show, you know, or, you know, see where you get and how, you know, what the difference is, because I know I've changed a lot since because I restarted running 3 years ago, and I know the way I run has changed drastically since I started. You know, the whole mindset's different too. No,
yeah,
I mean,
awesome.
Do you ever go to the point where you go through runs and you know, you've ran a course, but you kind of like ran it so much that you really didn't pay attention that you lost track of where you were running?
Like just zoning out, you mean?
Yep.
Yeah, I do that a lot. Like there's this one race that's right here and by my house, and I run and train out there all the time. So when I do races out there, it's like right where I train. So sometimes I'll kind of zone out and forget, oh, I'm supposed to turn around here instead of keep going. yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
You know, the funny thing about when I do speed runs, I watch the lights because I end up, the direction changes because if the light doesn't let me cross, I'll turn around and it's crazy when I try to do a speed run for speed because I got to watch traffic and people in L.A. do not know how to drive right.
Oh, that's dangerous. Yikes.
Yeah. I'm afraid of getting hit and I don't want to get hit. No, they have their cars. They don't know how to drive them.
Yeah, I think not getting hit
by a car
is more
not fun.
Important than nailing your feet.
But it's been great talking to you. I got to close and the show's ending. But it was great having you. I want to have you on maybe 6 months, see where you are. And, you know, and... You know, if you have any other friends who might want to come on the show and talk about that running, that'd be great. Because I like beginners, intermediate, or any type of person who's actually, you know, likes, you know, cares about running and, you know, wants to talk about it.
Sure, yeah, that would be great.
Well, yeah, but it's been great going talking to you. And I'll be sending the show as soon as we, you know, we both sign off and I'll send you the link. And then, you know... Because I saw you had a lot of friends, you know, like react to you doing the show. That was great. So I know you got people waiting to listen to hear you talk about your running.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show and giving me this opportunity.
Thank you. No, it was great talking to you. I mean, I may never run a triathlon or an Ironman, but I'll always envy it. You know?
Great talking to you, too.
No, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for being on the show. This has been Poet Runner, and I've been talking to Gabriella J. Sufar, and she's pretty impressive. And thank you for listening.
Thanks.